This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. No Jeff Merrick as Gord Stellick filling in today. Great day to do it. The very best time of the year, the next 2 weeks, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So loving that. We'll be all over it here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And, of course, those of you watching on Sportsnet 360. And, yes, the lineage of family broadcast royalty will be on display in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You got the McKenzie father and son, Bob and Sean, the late Dan Kelly, and, of course, John doing a great job. The Buck family out of St. Louis, Marv Albert, Kenny Albert out of New York, the Shulmans here in Toronto, Eddie Olchuk, and I think his three kids as well. And, of course, our own Justin Cuthbert and his dad, Chris Cuthbert, the father-son duo from Hockey Night in Canada, Chris, and, of course, here on Sportsnet and the fan, Justin. But Chris Cuthbert joining me this afternoon. How are you this afternoon, Chris?
I'm good, Gord. I now get to brag. I'm the second best sportscaster in the family. So, but good to be with you. And I know you've got a Justin too. So we've got that connection. And I figured you asked me on today just so a couple of old timers could reflect on 1959 and the last time the Leafs beat the Bruins in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's hard to believe. Well, anyway, hard to believe. And of course, the 60s, the Bruins and Rangers hardly ever made the Stanley Cup was one thing. Hey, a quick one before, but speaking of Justin, was he always interested in getting in broadcasting, or was it a late thing?
No, in fact, he did everything to avoid following in my footsteps. Went to Western for kinesiology. I think he spent a year in a clinic and then decided, you know what, maybe what Dad was doing isn't bad after all. But so it's worked out very well for him. Again, he's trying to carve a different path. So play-by-play is not something I don't think he's very interested in. So he obviously is better on camera than I am.
Okay, so we'll do the anatomy from Kisi Knowledge to Stanley Cup playoffs. Of course, you'll be the lead play-by-play guy throughout the playoffs. And Toronto, Boston, we weren't expecting it, and now we have it. And what's your gut feel? Everyone thinks they played the Bruins the last 7 years in a row, where it's actually been 5 years since they last played them. But what hits you when you talk about that series?
Funny, I got a couple texts yesterday. The Bruins again, and I said the same thing. I haven't had a chance to call one of these series, and I can't wait. And the fact that it has been 5 years, I think it's great for the league. I think it's a better series for the two original six markets, and I think the Battle of Florida is great for the NHL as well. So I'm intrigued. You know what? We get hung up on history. I already referenced 59, but you get hung up on the last three times it's gone seven games. But you know, there's so few players that were key in all of that that are going to be involved other than Brad Marchand. So in all three anyway. So I think it's fresh meat, and I can't wait.
The one guy that's missing, and he's the hardest guy to miss, Zdeno Chara. I mean, when I think of those series, I think, oh, certainly about Bergeron and Krejci who aren't there anymore, and certainly Marchand and Pasternak and that. But that was a big, big presence that really made its presence felt. And I know you got McAvoy and many other good ones in Boston now, but that to me is a big miss.
Yeah, it clearly is, because I think then the Bruins really did have a large physical edge, and Chara was the leading guy in that regard. And now I think you could argue that the Leafs should be able to stand up to anything physically that Boston hands them. And Ryan Reeves is probably the heavyweight champion of this series, although Patrick Maroon may have something to say about that. And maybe that's why Maroon's was a late acquisition for Boston, just to counter either Florida or a Ryan Reeves type of guy. But, you know, Bergeron, it's a lot different without Bergeron,
yeah,
too. And you remember game seven and a goal in the last minute and a goal in overtime. And that's one ghost they probably won't have to exercise, at least not with Patrice Bergeron on the ice.
I'll tell you, 82 regular season games, and a lot of them you kind of forget about, but we know the Bruins defeated the Leafs, Chris, every one of them. But I got to tell you, the last one, so many people said, okay, Leafs lost. I loved how they played. You had Bertuzzi, Domi. It's almost like this is what, when Brad Treliving talked about adding snot. This is what you're talking. And then Jake McCabe and the whole thing. So it seems in a lot of ways, I don't know how much it proves for myself. I don't know how much they needed to prove about being more physical and having that sandpaper. But it seemed like that was kind a good template of the kind of Leaf team that could have success in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. I think we've seen that. Talked about anatomy, the change from the start of the year to now. It's a much different team. It is a team that plays with a lot more snot than at the start of the season. But again, four losses, two of them in overtime, albeit. I was surprised to see seven straight losses against Boston. So if nothing else, the Leafs are due.
So was that a strange game, Tampa Bay, Toronto, game number 82, where you could forget about the other 38 players and just focus on 2-1 on each team going for an individual record?
It was strange. And, you know, I know Sheldon Keefe is getting some heat about the comment about being a distraction. But I think what he means is, I mean, there was that power play opportunity. John Tavares is in the high danger zone and could have, if he'd scored two in the game, he scored one late that he didn't even want. But if he'd shot from, you know, 10 feet out in a perfect spot, he might have had a 30-goal season. But, you know, he wasn't trying to score. He was looking for Austin Matthews. And starting Saturday, that's not the way the Leafs are going to be playing. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus here because it was obvious what the goal was and everybody was on board for it. And I think they should have been on board for something as special as a 70-goal season, but it wasn't real. And I know even after the game, the Lightning players, Steven Stamkos, mentioned that they literally were counting passes on the power play because they wanted to make sure that Kucherov was always involved in the potential scoring play. So they wouldn't shoot unless he was one of the second last guys to touch the puck. And I got to admit, as we were calling the game, I was doing that as well. You're actually doing the count to because for that night, that was the only reason to be there for both teams and the only reason probably to watch.
I always say every year I'm going to try to keep track about what having a great finish, how it factors or doesn't in the playoffs and vice versa, having a weak finish. And I keep forgetting to do it all the time. I do remember, though, back in those Leaf-Ottawa series way back when, that Ottawa always had a better finish than the Leafs, had a better record against the Leafs, but the Leafs kicked their ass, what, 4 out of 5 or 4 out of 6 years. So have you ever found there's any kind of measure about how you finish the regular season versus playoff success?
No, I don't think so. And in fact, John Cooper mentioned that the other day, that one of their Stanley Cup runs, they lost their last three. And the other Stanley Cup run, they were 3-6-1. And I went back with the Leafs since the last time they played the Bruins. The records are almost identical. Since the All-Star break, the records are almost identical. And since January 1st, the Leafs actually are a little bit better than Boston, but really not much between the two teams. So, if Boston didn't like the way they finished, I'm sure they couldn't score. And the Leafs didn't like the way they finished because they were allowing way too many goals. But you don't flip a switch, but there's going to be a playoff switch flipped. And I expect both teams to be much better right from the opening faceoff than we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
Of course, the ultimate playoff determiner, of course, is outstanding goaltending, whichever way. And if you look at the four Atlantic Division teams in, there's no question about Florida with Bobrovsky. Vasilevsky looks like he's the real deal again. Boston has the 1-2 punch. You know, I when I say defend the Leaf goaltending, I just mean I feel good about it, but not confident about it, just because there is no history of, you know, playoff experience in either Samsonov, who was on waivers earlier this year, and Joe Woll, who I thought played really well last year in the playoffs, but coming off an injury. And you're ahead on that going into the playoffs, the goaltending in the series.
Well, I guess it's got to be a little bit of a concern just the way Samsonov's finished the year. But I think Sheldon Keefe's done a lot to try and keep his confidence as high as possible. He hasn't dwelled on some of the bad goals that have gone in of late. And he has reminded people he's the guy that ended the playoff drought for the Leafs in goal with the series win against Tampa. He was the better goaltender in round one last year, and nobody would have bet that. I'm curious about Boston, too, because Swayman's been brilliant against the Leafs, But he has struggled down the stretch. I think I read he's allowed 3+ in most of his games down the stretch. And Ullmark's finished well, but you know, there's some goes for him. And I'm kind of guessing that Boston is going to be in a win and stay in mode this year because clearly they decided what they did last year wasn't right. They kept going with Ullmark despite the rotation throughout the season, and then they get to game seven and throw Swayman almost to the wolves in the last deciding game.
Chris Cuthbert, Hockey Night in Canada, joining Gord Stellick. Gord Stellick filling in on the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. And you look at the Battle of Florida. And I'll tell you that, there's no team you really want to face in the playoffs. Well, maybe you could say the Islanders and Capitals because the way they squeaked in. But the Tampa Bay Lightning, Chris, to be a dominant team for so many years and this year have to scratch and claw and just go about it a different way. And then all of a sudden, Vasilevsky's healthy again. They did it without a healthy Vasilevsky for a good chunk. And all those guys are rearing their ugly heads again. You know, not just Kucherov getting that record. Steven Stamkos looks like he's pissed. He doesn't have a contract yet that he's going to show them. He's the guy that hoisted the cup twice. That's a team I wouldn't want to face right now.
I totally agree. The only caveat now, and I've been trying to talk up the Lightning for a few weeks with people who will ask me about who's the sleeper, and that's always the answer. Kucherov's lethal, Stamkos red hot. They've got the pillars of without Sergachev, but everybody else has kind of been critical to their Stanley Cup wins in the last few years. So I think they're really dangerous. The only concern I might have about them right now is, other than Sergachev, they've been healthy since Vasilevsky came back. And yet now, suddenly, last week or two, there are some injuries that are causing some concern. They played a man short in that last game against the Leafs. So, you know, how healthy are they going into a series that's going to be bruising and extremely physical against Florida? But, if you ask me, bottom tier teams in the postseason, what's the best chance of one of them going to win the Stanley Cup? I would say Tampa, unless you're considering the Vegas Golden Knights a bottom tier team. And even though I see where they finished, I don't consider them that.
Well, you were in Edmonton when they were winning all those Stanley Cups years ago, and there's, you know, kind of repeated elite player, generational player, Connor McDavid, another one close to that, like Mark Messier was in Leon Draisaitl. And I know those Oilers, it took a few years. Once they got to the promised land, they were on a run. I would say a deeper team back then than this one. But talk about this Jekyll and Hyde team that really dug a deep, deep hole. And then also, I think Knoblauch, the fit, the fact he coached McDavid and Junior, just whatever, no criticism of Jay Woodcroft, but man of men to get out of it, but get out of it with a vengeance and about the chance of your time being now.
It feels like it, doesn't it? And you remember back in the 80s, that was a promising group that you knew was going to win a cup, but the question was when, and they really had to pay some dues before they finally broke through against the Islanders. And I sense that Edmonton is ready for that. I think they get a huge break in playing LA, I believe, instead of Vegas in the opening round. Although you could argue that maybe to get past Vegas in a first round might have really launched them on their way. I don't know if all the dominoes fall that easily in the West, no matter how you start, because it's going to be a tough road. But it does feel like the Oilers have a lot of the pieces in place. They've really, the bottom six is so much different, so much better than it was. I think Henrique obviously makes it better. And Corey Perry has been a nice fit there. And Evander Kane of late has looked like a guy that could turn it up in the postseason like he has in the last couple of years. So like a lot of teams, it hinges on goaltending. And Stuart Skinner might have concerned some people last night. But for the most part, I don't know how concerned they've been about their goaltending this year. So it could be their year. And all the people that picked them to win before the season started, I don't know why you'd feel any less confident after 82 games than you did before they dropped the puck back in October.
Yeah, because, Chris, they talked about, you know, it's been Darnell Nurse and trying to get some depth on D, and now you got him really as maybe a bit of an overpaid number three D. I mean, that's more a tribute to the other guys like Bouchard and Ekholm. And so it seems like those elements, those boxes have been checked. And I do know the prototypical playoff player, if he can be the X factor, would be a guy like Evander Kane.
Yeah, I think you had that huge playoff a couple years ago against Calgary in particular. But Kane, it just seems like he's tailor-made for the postseason. He's going to intimidate. He won't be intimidated. He'll get to the hard areas. He can go on those hot streaks. But they have so many weapons. And, you know, you look for holes and you wonder Kulak, CeCe, but every team's got that kind of holes, and Ekholm makes such a big difference, I think. I had a tough time leaving him off my Norris ballot. I did, but I feel bad about it because I think he was a guy that, you know, has made a huge difference to that team.
So on my NHL Morning Skate show, we have to do predictions. Right away, you hear from the people working for organizations that you didn't pick, which is goes with the territory of that. Now, are you able to duck that, or did you have to pick a Chris Cuthbert Stanley Cup favorite?
No, I don't like doing that, only because I think everybody's listening to, oh, see, he's calling it because he wants that team to win because he predicted that team to win. So that's my excuse, and I'm going to stick to it. But how do you pick, Gord? Honestly, there's 10 teams that can win, maybe more. Maybe there's more than 10, and I wouldn't say that every year. But it's unbelievably wide open this year, and I don't know if I'm going to be surprised. Unless, as you said, the Islanders or the Capitals go on a run, that'll surprise me.
No, I said start of the year, 25 teams expect to make the playoffs. So there's 9 teams that are pissed off right now. And I think there's 7 teams that expect to be in the finals. So there'll be at least 5 that'll be ticked off as well when it's all said. And I, to your point, Chris, I don't remember that kind of balance as well in recent years.
Yeah. And those contenders could go out in round one.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me about the Canadian teams, and I thought, you know, their matchups look tough, and yet I like a lot about every team. But the Jets have won 8 in a row, and congratulations, you get to play Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado. So 3 or 4 Canadian teams could win, but 3 or 4 Canadian teams could be out in round one. Although I amend that a little bit now because I do think the Oilers are going to get through. I was a little concerned about that first round against Vegas, less so against the Kings, and I'll let the Kings get mad at me for saying that.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looked like for a while you might have a well-deserved weekend off, but back at it tomorrow night with the call. Game one, the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Boston Bruins, and Hockey Night in Canada, as mentioned throughout, right till the final call when the Stanley Cup is awarded. Chris, busy guy. I really appreciate time today, and you did a good job in son Justin's shadow this afternoon. Congratulations.
Wow, those are big shoes to fill for sure. But thanks, Gord. Best time of the year to be working, so can't wait.
Absolutely. Chris Cuthbert joining us, like we said, the lead play-by-play voice for Hockey Night in Canada. And, of course, all the way through, we will have that coverage for you on Sportsnet. Of course, Sportsnet Radio, of course, will be following everything. The very best time of year. All the sports going on, but the very best time of year, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Well, speaking of some of those Canadian-based teams as well, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, Bet Local. Yes, the Winnipeg Jets. Now, I got to tell you, in previous years, I probably would have lost the house betting on the Winnipeg Jets. I picked them to win the Cup a couple of years ago. I like this bet this year. Avalanche at Jets, Jets -1.5. And that's what I'm going to take as far as that goes. I just got a hunch. I don't know what it is. Everything, the karma seems to be good. Once Hellebuck and Shifley signed before the season, everything just seems to be right with the Winnipeg Jets. And we talked to Chris about goaltending Connor Hellebuck. He is the trump card for any goaltending situation out there. So the Jets -1.5 against the Avalanche. That's what El Gordo will be taking. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, Bet Local. So, as mentioned, we got a whole bevy of NHL. And it's funny how quick it'll turn. Because if you win the first game on the road, all of a sudden you have home ice advantage. You know, so all of a sudden it just turns about people's thinking. And then the whole question, what is home ice advantage? Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, have a way, way better playoff record since this last eight-year run on the road than they do on home ice. And yet you play all season long for home ice advantage. Well, in the Leafs' case, they didn't really get it. You know, coming third in their division, they're going to be road warriors for a big chunk of it. So there's a lot to disseminate what is going on in that regard. In a half hour's time, Sean Reynolds will join us, and we'll talk about those Winnipeg Jets. I mean, there's just so many things to like about it. Who would have think about the Winnipeg Jets being buyers, as they were, going out the trade deadline, Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli. So usually traditional sellers, traditionally someone they felt they couldn't re-up with a contract, and they're able to go out and be buyers. So a lot of things coming together for the Winnipeg Jets. Darren Pang, we'll get his take on the Arizona situation as well. Panger was in Arizona or Phoenix a number of years back. Of course, we know him more on the national scale covering things, but after being in St. Louis and winning a Stanley Cup, broadcasting the team that won a Stanley Cup, being a part of that organization back in Chicago, and a lot of work to be done there. But the fact that they have Connor Bedard as their likely Calder Trophy winner makes things a lot rosier looking ahead to the future. So he will kick things off next hour. Darren Pang talking about all that's going on around the NHL playoffs on the eve of game number one tomorrow night. Like we said, Chris Cuthbert will be having the Leafs-Boston game. You're listening to the Jeff Merrick Show. Gord Stellick filling in for Jeff on the very best time of the year on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to Jeff Merrick Show. Gord Stellick filling in for Jeff today. Of course, we're on the Sportsnet Radio Network and also on Sportsnet 360 as well, and welcome you aboard the very best time of the year, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoff action, and looking forward to the eight different rounds that are going on around the NHL. And, of course, on top of it for TNT, former outstanding NHL goaltender with TNT and now analyst back with the Chicago Blackhawks, proving you can go home again. The one and only Darren Pang joining Gord Stellick this afternoon. How are you, Panger?
Hey, Gord. It's great to be on with you, buddy. And you can go home again. It's been a really great season, I think, with back with Chicago and everything they're going through, and basically the revamping of everything, and seeing Connor Bedard and this now Frank Naser and Kevin Korchinski and so many young players like Alex Vlasic. So anyway, it's been a lot of fun, and this is kind of where you and I started our togetherness here on our media platforms, where Pangervision began, is when I started here in Chicago. So it's great to return in one big happy circle, my friend.
Well, it was 30 years ago, believe it or not, 1994 playoffs, and the Fan was relatively new. Leafs were playing Chicago, so we're at old Maple Leaf Gardens, and I'm doing my afternoon show from an empty Maple Leaf Gardens on game day. And, of course, Panger, you'll be so gracious, came up, and we created Pangervision. You didn't need it. You're big enough yourself. But this is what I envision, not just Ray, a multimedia Pangervision 30 years later. It's made you squat, but it's got a big-sounding name, right?
It sure does, Gord. It sure does, Gordon. I think in our business, if you're going to burn any bridges, you better be a really good swimmer, I was told a long time ago. And so fortunately, I haven't done that, and I've been able to be in this business for a long time, and lucky for it, because you know what, Gord? The other night, I was with TNT. I was in Toronto. We did that game, obviously, the Austin Matthews search for 70, the Kucherov game. And it's games like that, that it's end of the year. The team points, actually, for one of the few times, it really didn't matter about the team. It did matter about the individual. And so that was very unique. And that makes our job special, is to go to games like that and to see history or not see history. And you could see the frustration of the Maple Leafs when they couldn't feed Austin Matthews, who had, 15 or 16 attempts in that game, some great chances. And how great is our game of hockey and the common denominator, or a goaltender that's only played, five or six games in Tompkins, and he ends up like stymieing a guy like Austin Matthews. So that's just the game of hockey, and that's what makes it great for all of us that go to every single game, because you never know what you're going to get in any box that gets handed to you.
Yeah, a lot of things that happened. And one, I wanted to talk to you about one of your stops, and that being in Arizona. And, you know, Mike Johnson, I work with him. He talks about 6 years he played with the Coyotes. Paul Bissonnette had a real, you know, warm message to send from his time there. What was Darren Pang's time like there?
I had such a great time. I just finished 13 or 14 years with ESPN. I was told on July 1st, I believe, by Larry Christensen that we no longer had the rights to the NHL. I had 2 more years left on my deal, so I wasn't really expecting it. And he said, listen, as per the agreement, you know, you're a free agent to go. And I was like, wow, you know, and that's all I'd known is working for a great network like ESPN for all those years. And sure enough, doesn't Mike Barnett and Cliff Fletcher give me a phone call and ask me if I'd want to go to Arizona. They said they got something special brewing there. And I'm like, all right, you know, and so I kind of hummed and hawed a little bit. I'm like, Arizona, I don't know if I want to go all the way there. And then, you know, then I found out through them that Wayne was going to be coaching. It's like, wow, what a moment this would be. So to go fast forward on that, I loved Arizona. I backed up Arizona. I feel like there's just so much more to it than we see on TV. Given a fair chance, I do believe there's such great hockey fans there. It made me sad when I left. They went into bankruptcy when Jerry Moyes inexplicably tried to hand over the keys to Jim Balsillie. And next thing you know, that was 2009. And so I came to the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, they hung on for a long time. They need great owners. Look at how many franchises now have got great owners. Look at Jeff Vinnick of the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's a great example of a guy that came in from the outside, bought that team, built around it. He's built a foundation around that building. He pours money into it. He's a real billionaire. He's a real guy that cares about everybody. And that's, man, if a guy like that were in Arizona, there would be no talk of movement whatsoever. So to make a long story short, again, I love the people there. And it's not just the direct fans. It's the people. It's the security guards. It's the Jim O'Neills, when Richie Nairn. It's the broadcasters like Todd Walsh that did such a great job there, and Tyson Nash. And, boy, anyway, I'm really sad for them, to be honest with you. It breaks my heart. But hopefully they end up coming back. And I think I think hopefully with more stability, and somebody that's going to be loyal to the fans and the people that have poured their hearts out to that organization and to that team for all the moves that they've made inside the city.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a couple, like, you know, we you know, talk about our good friends, the Nashville broadcasters. We'll talk about Pete Weber and that. They were ready to go. They it was done. And then they stayed on board because of ownership. And I even think way back when, the state of Minnesota. Okay, the Minnesota North Stars, because Norm Green ends up being the owner after the Gunn family. They move. It was a money play for him. Go to Dallas. So they got the Wild, because you had to have an NHL team in Minnesota. And I hope that that is the hope in Arizona 5 years down the road. It seems to be people think it'd have to be a different owner, whether that's fact or not. But hopefully that can be a model that they're able to, you know, follow and get a team back eventually.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely the hope. But I mean, I guess if you're like a Tyson Nash, for example, or Matt McConnell that do the television side, or Bob Heathouse that does the radio side, I mean, are you waiting around and you're hoping in right. 5 years? Like, what do people do between now and then? I was looking at the face of the poor girl that's the ice girl. And my daughter actually did that for a couple of years there. She's a good skater and she loved the job and just the camaraderie. She's crying on the ice when they're saying goodbye. It's like, it breaks your heart. You know? And these poor kids and everybody, that's all they've known. Listen, I talked to Austin Matthews the other day, and I think you'll enjoy this, because I'm in the hallway in Tampa Bay. And I say, Austin, is it true that you were in the building as a 7 or 8 year old when Alex Ovechkin scored that unbelievable goal on his back? And he said, yeah, I was really close to the ice level. And I said, man, I called that game. He said, oh, I know that. And I said, and before I could say it again, he goes, and the Crosby goal. I go, that was about a week later. He was on his knees and he knocked it out of midair. He goes, yep. And people have no idea the impact. We took Austin Matthews from baseball in the great area of Arizona, because his uncle was a great baseball player. His dad liked baseball. None of them were into hockey. But we got him to hockey, and we've got a superstar in the NHL because of that, and that came from there. There's Dallas and Anaheim and the other parts of California, all over the world, Florida, we're getting these athletes, and we're stealing them from other sports. So they have been impactful. And if it's only Austin Matthews, which is not, because there's plenty more that have come from Arizona, that we got to the NHL, then it is meaningful, and it has meant something for all the work that they've all done there.
Okay, we got 16 teams, 8 playoff matches. Are one or two the most intriguing to you?
There's a lot that are intriguing to me. I tell you what, the one that might not be getting a lot of momentum is Winnipeg and Colorado.
Right.
I just think that's going to be a big boy, heavyweight, battles down low. You've got some, you know, obviously we got some superstars, superstars on one side, maybe really good stars that are unheralded on the Winnipeg side that you could call them superstars for sure. Great goaltender and Hellebuck. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to that one right there. And I think that's going to be an evenly matched battle. I was in, believe it or not, I was in Los Angeles last night. I was in Tampa. I went to Los Angeles. And the Kings now are going to face, you know, Edmonton. Again, I was more excited, and it has nothing to do with Edmonton and L.A., but they've done this twice already in the previous 2 years. But I was kind of looking forward to seeing maybe Dallas and Los Angeles. A different battle, different look for them as well. But then the other part that I'm going to is the two Florida teams. I remember a couple of years ago, that was just an all-out war. It was the most physical. It reminded me a little bit of a series a long time ago, L.A. It was the L.A. Kings with Daryl Sutter. I think it was their first Stanley Cup win. And it was the St. Louis Blues. And it was Ryan Reeves was on that fourth line. I had maybe the most hits in a series that's been recorded in history, or at least since they kept track of it. And I just feel like that one's going to be that kind of series. And it's going to be the team that ends up not taking the extra minor in the scrum, because you do not want to, if you're the Florida Panthers, do that extra stuff, all the shenanigans go on the scrums, all the stinky leather mitts, and then one guy ends up going to the penalty box and you put that vaunted power play of the Tampa Bay Lightning with the puck in their hand, led by Kucherov. So I think that one's got a lot for me too, to be honest with you. So I'll just pick two because there's just so many that are going around.
We talked about earlier, chatting with Chris Cuthbert and Elliot Friedman earlier, you know, on the show, and I'm just saying, watching the Atlantic Division, that the Tampa Bay Lightning may have been viewed the weakest of the four at the start of the year. No Vasilevsky for a chunk of it. They're getting older and that, but man, they scratch and clawed. I think having some adversity was a good thing for them this year. I know the last week or so, maybe there's some health issues that, but they really got it together, and Vasilevsky really got it together, and Stamkos seems like he's found the fountain of youth, and all those great things beyond Kucherov that they seem to have heading into the playoffs. Do you share that?
I do share that a lot. I say don't sleep on them at all. The only question is how banged up are they? That's obviously for anybody limping into the playoffs. But I feel like they've got such gumption, such winning gumption. They got a great coach. I think John Cooper's done his best coaching. I don't know if he's going to get any votes for Coach of the Year, but I think he deserves to get some recognition as the Coach of the Year in the NHL for the job that he has done. And I'll say this, the Asimons, the Hagels, the Chafees, I'm just going down some lists. Darren Radish last year had a good playoff in that opening round. I thought he was real solid to complement Hedman that didn't play in the last game. But when you've got a horse in the net that can, I mean, he can frustrate the opposition. He's not gonna get frustrated, or I think what would the other word be with all the crashing to the crease? He's not going to blink an eye when Matthew right. Tkachuk comes barreling into the crease, is what
distracted,
I'm saying.
Distracted.
Right. And he's big and strong enough to be able to push guys aside and to be able to just stop pucks. And so the more he does that, the more frustrated you end up getting. But let's face it, Florida's got some great shooters. They got some great setups. This is what I like about these two teams, their strategy in the offensive zone. They move the puck so seamlessly. They've got set plays, both of them. So now, is it about the set plays that work, or is it about how you're going to defend the set plays? So that goes down to the coaches, and especially the guys that run the D, and how good they're going to be in this series as well. Those plays from the hash marks to the goal line to the slot to one-timers, right-hand, left-hand, right-handers, it's just phenomenal to watch. It really impresses me with both these teams and the skill level that they have.
Darren Pang joining Gord Stellick on the Jeff Merrick Show, the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. So Patrick Waugh, so goaltenders seem to have a disproportionate numbers of coaches, general managers, and broadcasters, just like the just like the catchers in baseball, whatever, same thing, you know, some of they get a great view of the game when they're playing. And so we had another one in Patrick Waugh, of course, who's been there before. That's just a quiet New York Islander team. There was John Tortorella, there was a lot of noise about the Penguins always, what's going on. And all of a sudden, what Lou Lamoriello makes that move, he's done it with Jacques Lemaire, Pat Burns. He likes that Montreal lineage, right? You know, and now you got Patrick Waugh. What has been, and he goes at the goaltender. Like, if they're going to make it, it's going to be because of Sorokin, everybody thinks. And he kind of challenges his ace goaltender a bit. And here they are with the goaltender splitting with Varlamov, and they're in the playoffs. So talk about, to me, the sneaky, quiet team that's in.
very quiet, very sneaky. You are right about that. And it's funny because a lot of the stats, you know, didn't greatly improve from the change from Lane Lambert. But, I mean, there is one thing about Patrick, and I've spent several games between the benches, and obviously I go back to, I know it's a long time ago, but having the unique position of playing against him for a little bit in my career and then being a broadcaster for all the games that he has done, you know, as a player and getting to know him, it's the passion. He doesn't bring a game plan in a briefcase and lay it out. He doesn't come to a game and have a hard matchup and stick to it so much and so determined to stick with something when it's clearly not working and everybody can see it. I love his flexibility. I love the fact that he never gives up in a game. And I think that feeds into the players. It feeds into the bench. It's the way he talks. It's the way he grabs you on the bench and the way he holds you. It's the way he supports you. And I think it was a great hire. I love that he's back in the NHL. And listen, if I'm the goalie and Patrick Waugh grabs me and challenges me, or Marty Brodeur or somebody like that grabs me, I guess it's going to get my attention. You're not going to slough a guy like that off. If Wayne Gretzky's coaching and he wants to get more out of a Jeremy Roenick, well, of course you're going to listen. It's Wayne Gretzky. So he has that ability to do so. A lot of people tiptoe around the goaltending, which I never understood that. Get right to the heart of it. Goaltender's got to be better, then he's got to be better. If a defenseman's got to be better, he's got to be better. Get him to be a better defenseman. And so he's challenged at the right time, and he's pushed all the right buttons. He had top centerman on left wing. He had Barzal all over the map. And now he's going to probably settle in, start the series with the matchups that he wants. And I'm going to be doing game one of this series at 5 o'clock. So I'm flying out here in a little bit of time, and I'm looking forward to it. It does change the way you maybe think of the New York Islanders with him behind the bench. And so that's going to be a quiet series. I'll say that. It's not going to get all the hoopla of everybody else, but I think at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a very good hockey series.
So tiptoe around the goaltender, was that kind of like Mike Keenan did when he coached you in Chicago? Did he tiptoe around any kind of criticism?
That's a no, Gord. That's just pull him and pull him and pull him and then pull him again. And then put him back in the net and then tell everybody they got a goaltending problem. Oh, you opened up a can of worms right there. You're a beauty.
I remember he made you practice New Year's Day once. Whatever. Anyway, yeah. but the good part is he put you in the press box so much, you became a great broadcaster.
Well, actually, you are right about that. And that's when I started because he used to give it to me because I was at the old stadium so early in the day. And I remember one time I was there like really early, like 8 o'clock, because I'm like, I'm just starting this career. I gotta be there. I gotta be ready, and I gotta show people that I'm determined to be a broadcaster doing the Hawk Talk with Darren Pang, a hotline that got updated 3 times a day, in the pregame show with Brian Davis, as you remember.
Yeah.
And I remember him one time yelling at me for being there early and telling me I'm not a player anymore. What am I doing there early? And I was so confused. I'm like, man. Like, at one point, he wants you to be a professional and be there and be ready, and now I'm in a broadcast role. But in all fairness, you know, Mike and I did have some really good moments, and as a broadcaster, you know, later on in life, he would always come up and he'd always kind of probably give me more information than anybody else because I went through the wrath of Mike. And
yeah.
I've always said this too, Gord, I would have liked to play for him again. I think everybody should think of that when you're going through a tough time. You know, don't be a baby. Don't be whining. Don't complain to everybody. You know, put your head down and work and say the right things. But man, if you could get another chance, and a lot of players got another chance with him and they ended up succeeding because he knew them and they knew him a little bit better.
Sorry for all the therapy. I'm going to get you revisiting and all that stuff. But just I got the old Norris Division days. Yeah.
I got to go pour a bourbon before I get on the plane.
You know, when you were talking about Patrick Waugh, actually, we talked to Jeff Gorton this morning, president of the Montreal Canadiens, but it was Kent Hughes who brought it up, and then Jeff elaborated. I love that talk about, instead of coming in with the know-it-all briefcase nowadays, the sermon, and I'll use Mike Babcock out of respect later in his career. You know, he was kind of a coaching god, whatever. But they said about what they liked about Marty St. Louis and why they picked up the 2-year extension was every day he's finding ways to get better. Every day he's challenging himself. He doesn't have all the answers. He knows it, and it's making him a better coach, and it's making his team a better team.
I love that philosophy. Again, that's another great example. and I'm not just saying French Canadian, but he's got passion. He's good, but he's also very stoic on the bench. I've been very impressed with his bench demeanor, not overreacting a lot of times and surveys the situation. I did tell Vardy one time, I said, you and me coaching, I'd have a hard time seeing over these players. You got a milk crate there that you're standing on. But he's and you know, you love the determination, but you love the hockey sense that he has, and so for that, you're going to get a coach that's not going to bail out on his players. He's just not going to quit at any particular point. He's just going to keep going. He's going to find different ways. Listen, I like to think of, because I really enjoy watching him. And if you watch down the stretch, the Bally Sports Detroit broadcast, it's not unlike an old broadcaster. Mickey Redmond's one of my favorites of all time. He's over 70 years old, and he keeps finding different ways of describing the game of hockey. And he doesn't go, oh, in my day, and he doesn't go back, you know, on that all the time. He finds a way. Well, you know, Patrick Waugh's finding a way every single day. Marty St. Louis, there's so many coaches out here. And another guy that keeps reinventing himself a little bit is Lavi. I mean, you know, I know he's got the Lavi lock. He's got the great systems, but he never gives up in a game either. I mean, you're not going to bail out on a hockey game or pack it in with that guy behind the bench. And I think that's great for our game. They're coaches. They're a lot, you know, that's what you want is the energy and the passion and the determination to never give up in a game.
So, you know, you talk and you mentioned Auston Matthews, and you were there when Ovechkin scored and things like that, being part of a call. And usually the biggest part, obviously, is a play-by-play guy. But in our business, you mentioned Mickey. How about Ken Daniels, Mickey Redmond, the crazy end to the regular season? You would have thought three of their calls, and they were outstanding calls, that the Red Wings, if you put a tape together, they won the Stanley Cup this year. But instead, they don't make the playoffs in maybe the craziest ending night I can ever remember.
What I really enjoyed about their broadcast, even when they weren't good, they have fun. They do a great job with John Keating, and whether it's Chris Osgood or Murph in the studio, but they at the end of every game at home, you know, there's Mickey Redmond. He puts on his Carhartt jacket, and he's got his farm boy still roots about him, and they just talk hockey. He might bring out an old Northland stick, and it's entertaining, and that's what we should be about. But in terms of their energy, I watched the Detroit Red Wings an awful lot, and when the game, you know, it mattered, and the broadcasters, you could tell it mattered to them. It mattered with every save. It mattered with every shot, with every opportunity, with every goal that was scored, which they came back and scored so many goals late in the games. But you could feel it. It's not a cookie cutter emotion that's this time of year. And I think that broadcast really showed a lot of anybody that's out there, national, not national, local, regional, that doing play-by-play and bringing this crescendo of emotion and energy to the very top is what it's all about. I could be in the other room, listen to their game, and I knew exactly what was going on without watching the TV screen. So that's a great compliment to them. They did a phenomenal job. They're great to listen to. They're Hall of Famers. And I know Kenny's not in the Hall of Fame, but I think someday he'll get a knock on the door because he's that good.
So, Panger, I know you got ahead. You got first-round Stanley Cup playoff coverage. Is that Stately Panger Estates where you're broadcasting from now? Where are you right now on the Zoom?
I am in Chicago.
Okay.
I don't know if you can see it right there.
Yeah, nice. Great skyscraper in that.
That's the Willis Tower, which used to be the Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Hancock Center's around the corner. So it's a place that my wife and I rented. We've got a little place in Michigan, and obviously St. Louis. I've got little granddaughters there, and in New Jersey. So this was a change for us. But you know what it did? It's given us a lot of energy in coming back to Chicago and being in this great city of Chicago. So it's been fun. I'm glad you like the view.
I do. Well, the rumor is Oprah and Stedman live in the next penthouse suite next to you. Is that correct?
Stedman. I haven't heard that name forever. Actually, this is the area that Oprah had her studios, right here in the West Loop. Randolph and Washington and Madison. Yes, exactly. She was one of the first that really, you know, dug down right here.
Well,
really started something great.
She couldn't get a better guest than you, like we could on the Jeff Merrick show as well. Hey, Panger, like I said, we go way back. Always appreciate you making the time, and great chat. Have a great playoff. I know you will. Look forward to the calls, and thanks very much for today, pal.
Call anytime. You know that. We've had a special run together.
Thanks very much. Darren Pang joining us, and he's, like he said, heading off to the Stanley Cup playoffs. What a great city, Chicago, as well. I've always viewed it as a bigger Toronto. Minneapolis is a smaller Toronto. If I had to kind of draw comparisons, and certainly you can go home again. Darren Pang could go anywhere. You could go home again anywhere if you're Darren Pang, but back covering the Chicago Blackhawks, but also the NHL on TNT he'll be a part of. And like you said, there's an intriguing series. There's really no shortage of intriguing series that are out there. Toronto, Boston, that we talked quite a bit about. We talked to Elliot Friedman at the start, then Chris Cuthbert. Chris Cuthbert will be doing the call, the play-by-play on the Toronto, Boston first-round series beginning tomorrow night. And, of course, a great history there. Even like, you know, New York Rangers and Washington, the Washington Capitals. I mean, the Rangers are obviously favored in that series. But the Washington Capitals, that had some bite a couple of years ago when, remember, Tom Wilson kind of twisted Artemi Panarin's helmet off at the end. And there was a lot of a brouhaha about that. And who knows what, if you want to kind of get involved in that manner. I know Tom Wilson had a suspension once during the season, but the physicality part is huge in the playoffs. Does a Charlie Lindgren, who's been a real pleasant surprise, does he match up to Igor Shesterkin? Whatever. So a lot of good things out there. We did talk about the Winnipeg-Colorado series, and that was the one that Darren Pang just said as far as intrigue goes. It's got a lot of different ways about it because Colorado seemed home and cooled out. The Winnipeg Jets started kind of tepidly the season and then had the great news right off the bat. Mark Scheifele, Connor Hellebuyck re-upping, new 7-year contract staying beyond this season when a lot of people expected at least one of them, maybe both of them, would head somewhere as an unrestricted free agent. And it really took them kind of a few games to get going. And then at the end of the season, they really got on a heater, a Jack Hughes-termed heater, including a big, 7-0 win in Colorado last Saturday. So that also changed things. And now maybe the most difficult arena to win during the course of the season, that being in Colorado, they do not have home ice advantage anymore. It's the Winnipeg Jets who have home ice advantage in their first round series against the Colorado Avalanche. So there was a lot of changing of the guard that went on, not just the Florida Panthers supplanting the Boston Bruins in first place in the Atlantic Division. So not just those that were scratched and clawed and made a playoff position at the end, like the New York Islanders and Washington Capitals, but a lot of movement up above, including last night, especially in the Pacific Division with the Vegas Golden Knights losing and the Los Angeles Kings victory. Well, when we come back, we'll talk about those Winnipeg Jets in that series against the Colorado Avalanche. Sean Reynolds will stop by next. You're listening to The Jeff Merrick Show. Gord Stellick filling in for Jeff today on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Gord Stellick filling in for Jeff Merrick this afternoon. As I've said many times, the very best time of the year. First round of the NHL Stanley Cup playoff action the next 2 weeks, wall-to-wall action, not just for the Canadian-based teams, but all 16 teams in the 8 different playoff series that are going on around the National Hockey League. Going to be joined by Sean Reynolds soon, right? In a few minutes' time, Sean Reynolds is going to join me, talk a little bit of Winnipeg Jets hockey, what is going on there. Okay, he's going to join us, chat about that. One of the 8 series going on, like we said, 4 Canadian-based teams that are involved in it. Want to say thanks, Austin Mackey, David Siss, Andrew Adams, Jen Rolnick, the Pit Crew. No wonder Merrick has an easy time doing this show. So there we go. And Austin Mackey, kind of a motivational speaker as well. And liking memories of Stellectricity coming up as well to the forefront this afternoon. But like I said, it's no problem doing this particular time of year, first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And when we head to Winnipeg, first the pleasant surprise, if you're a Winnipeg Jet fan, was being in Winnipeg, but also a very intriguing series against the Colorado Avalanche. And the whole notion of goaltending, and I think, you know, one of the things is I could have talked to Darren Pang forever, but the last couple of years, it's not been the Vasilevskis of the world that have been the de facto difference, that a goaltender has stolen as many series, has been the factor in winning a Stanley Cup. You look at last year with the Vegas Golden Knights, year before with Georgiev and what went on with the Colorado Avalanche. I think of the Chicago Blackhawks winning three Stanley Cups spread out over a few years with Antti Niemi and then Corey Crawford. And Corey Crawford was getting all kinds of scrutiny and some question marks about if it was good enough goaltending to win a Stanley Cup. So in the case of Winnipeg and Colorado, you've got a goaltender that was good enough to win a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago, and you've got probably the Vezina Trophy winner again this year in Connor Hellebuyck, giving the Winnipeg Jets a decided advantage in that particular series. And you get closer to home in the Eastern Conference, and again, that's one of the questions going on about Toronto and Boston as far as the goaltending situation goes. There's certainly even the Carolina Hurricanes that a lot of people are picking to win the Stanley Cup and wondering, even though both Kochetkov and Freddie Anderson have been lights out of late, again, the goaltending as far as hoisting the Stanley Cup. Well, as mentioned, a busy time for everybody, all hands on deck around Sportsnet to cover the National Hockey League. Sean Reynolds covering the Winnipeg Jets and the NHL for Sportsnet, joining Gord Stellick this afternoon. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing great, Gord. Thanks for having me on.
So there was such a compelling race at the end to make the playoffs in the East that a lot of stuff out there kind of got on the back burner that actually was significant things as far as jockeying for positions. You know, Florida ends up in first in the Atlantic Division, and then Winnipeg has that weekend in Colorado and the last number of games after being in a bit of a funk, get their act in gear, get home ice advantage, and now taking on the Colorado Avalanche. And, you know, we play all year, or you play all year for home ice advantage. Certainly in Colorado, you would think it's a factor that you want a home ice advantage. But historically, like in Toronto, isn't something that's worked out great for Winnipeg in the past, correct?
Well, yeah, if you're going down that road, the whiteout has been terrible for the Jets. I mean, they did win a couple games in Winnipeg when they... the year that the fans, there was like a couple fans, not a couple, I think there was 500 or whatever fans they were in the building that one year that the Montreal Canadiens went to the Cup final. But the Jets basically ran into the Vegas Golden Knights in the conference final in 2018, won the first game there in the whiteout, and then they really haven't won since. The whiteout has not been a hospitable place for the home team by any means. So, I mean... I think you want to get home ice advantage. They clearly wanted to get home ice advantage. They pushed for it down the stretch. We all know what the Colorado Avalanche are capable of on home ice. To me, this is a matchup thing, which it usually is, but being able to control the matchups on home ice in this series, when if you shut down Nathan MacKinnon, you've got a really good chance of winning this series. And when you have maybe the best shutdown line in hockey in Adam Lowry's line with the Winnipeg Jets, the ability to control the matchups for four of a possible seven games should be a big factor in this series if it does go deep in the first place.
So you bring up the other point. So yeah, going down memory lane, I want to extol the positives more because it's been a real positive season. But the term white... And it's the first time in a few years that you have not heard white noise around the Winnipeg Jets about players wanting to leave or what's going on. Why did Paul Maurice leave midseason? All these other kinds of things. And I think even Vancouver's case, like last year, Jim Rutherford, you know, star of the year, a lot of white noise there. This year, no white noise. And this is a year we're not talking about who wants to leave, who doesn't want to stay. This is a year you're talking about trade deadline acquisitions in Winnipeg. And I got to think that's a huge part. What happened off the ice, why it reflected on the ice.
Yeah, 100%. I think you have to give a lot of credit to Kevin Cheveldayoff in this situation. Winnipeg, we all know, hey, I was born, raised in this area here. We all know this isn't, you know, the flashiest city. And we all know that if, you know, players come here because they want sunshine, this isn't your place. If you want great shopping, it's not your place either. The Winnipeg Jets have done a real good job of identifying players that were a fit and were here to play and to win. So I think last year's two trade deadline pickups, which were unheralded for a lot of people, but in Nino Niederreiter and Vladislav Namestnikov, Kevin Cheveldayoff goes out and gets those guys, and he gives Nito Niederreiter, something that he hadn't had for very long in his career. He's been bouncing around a whole bunch of different places. He gave Nito Niederreiter stability. So what does Nito Niederreiter do? Well, he comes here, he feels that stability. He feels it's an organization that really wants him. And so he doubles down. He stays here afterwards. He extends with the Winnipeg Jets and now is part of what I believe is the best shutdown line in the league. And then you've got Vladislav Namestnikov, who really couldn't find a home. And maybe we're talking about his NHL career being over if he doesn't come to Winnipeg. Gets reunited with Rick Bonus, who had him both in Tampa and in Dallas. Big fan of his. And now he's resurrected, stays long-term with the Winnipeg Jets, re-signs with the Winnipeg Jets. And now he's one of the reasons, as the fourth-line center of the Winnipeg Jets, this team has a crazy amount of depth and could probably boast being one of the best depth teams in the league. So the Jets built this really, really deep team, and they've done it with a lot of, it's almost like the island of misfit toys, a lot of players that were in different places. Even Sean Monahan, you know, you go back to the trade deadline and there's a boatload paid for Lindholm, and Monahan kind of goes for, I know he goes for a first round pick, but if you take a look at those two players and how they've played out after the draft, the Winnipeg Jets got Sean Monahan for a song, and now it's a player that I could see them really pushing hard to re-sign next year, and him finding a place here because there's a fit. He's doing great on the second line. This is an organization that is really pushing to win. So the white noise, what happened, the Jets really did do a good job of taking the players that didn't want to be here and finding a way to get them out the door. They weren't always the best at that. They kept Evander Kane in this city for a long time when he didn't want to be here. It had an effect on the room. They've cleared out the people they don't want to be here, and they've gone around the league and found really good players who are really good fits for Winnipeg, who don't mind being here because they've found a home and they found a place where they can try and win. It's been a good job by Kevin Cheveldayoff to get the mix right in Winnipeg.
And Sean, you know, another thing in him hiring Rick Bonus, and I look last year that what he did after the Vegas series is kind of like when Daryl Sutter first came back and it worked, and then it didn't work at the end in Calgary. And all of a sudden that Rick Bonus just said, hey, we're going to get fired anyway. I'm going to do it. Tough love's required. Screw it. I'm going to do that. And you saw Rick Tocchet's done it with Vancouver. Sheldon Keefe Moore doing it with Toronto. That they're getting coaching cartage. There's been no season like that. That all of a sudden, the Rick Bonus was the precursor of the 2024. You can take the kid gloves off and how much you can push it.
Well, and this really is the issue that needed solving in Winnipeg. It's what Rick Bonus was brought in for. And I just have to go on the record and say, we said it at the time. I thought it was kind of crazy that at that year when Rick Bonus was hired, there were so many people, Jim Montgomery, so many other coaches that were on the market that year. And everyone was kind of focused in different directions. When the Jets picked up Rick Bonus, I looked around. I said, hey, he's got a history here in the city of Winnipeg, played for the team, coached the team at one time, loves the city. But B, like, how many coaches out there have been to the Stanley Cup final in the last number of years and can add a defensive element to a team that could have used it? He was kind of the perfect fit, and it was really kind of a stroke of luck. We talk about, you know, all the good stuff that Kevin Cheveldayoff has done. It was a stroke of luck that no one else thought to go out and get Rick Bonus. It was kind of like all the prettiest bells at the ball were gone and Rick Bonus was still there. What a great pickup, and what a guy who really should be, you know, considered for the Jack Adams this year. He's done a great job. But what he needed to do was take a Winnipeg Jets team that for years, since 2018, has been an extremely capable team. And, you know, to the point that a lot of pundits were picking them to win the cup year after year, an extremely capable team that could not get out of its own way. And what happened last year is I think even Rick Bonus was surprised that at the beginning of the year, he got the Winnipeg Jets playing the way they needed to play. They were one of the top teams in the league. And then they fell apart down the stretch. And to your point, tough love, kid gloves off. He hammers them in the media, but he is trying to shatter the issue that has plagued this Winnipeg Jets organization for years, an issue that Paul Maurice was never able to solve. And it sure looks like now, even though they had a little bit of a skid down the stretch going into the playoffs as the hottest team in the NHL, it looks like that kind of problem of the Winnipeg Jets getting in their own way looks to have been solved, at least in the regular season. We'll see if he can carry that with this team into the playoffs.
Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet joining Gord Stellick on the Jeff Merrick Show, the Sportsnet Radio Network, and on Sportsnet 360. You mentioned earlier about Adam Lowry and the great shutdown line. I always talk about the dressing room is real. Nobody really knows the inner workings except the players. And they're always, you talked about it, whether white noise, whatever, doesn't always have to be the best player. It usually is one of the best players that wears the C. But it sounded like that's a real huge, some people may say quiet move, but something really done right.
Yeah, you nailed it. And hey, I'll be honest, there was maybe not a wrong choice here. It sounds to me like it came down to Adam Lowry and Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey is a constant leader on this team time and again. He's captain material. And at the time, I had thought because Josh Morrissey is more of the star player, maybe he's the guy that you want on your promotions material. He's the guy around the league that people are going to be talking about a little bit more. Not that people aren't talking about Adam Lowry. I know, hey, the number one centers for other teams when they come in to play the Winnipeg Jets, I know they're talking about Adam Lowry. So I don't know that there was a wrong decision in between the two of them, but another way of saying this is Adam Lowry was an extremely right proper decision for them. The Winnipeg Jets, to the point of what Rick Bowness needed to address, and Rick Bowness has said it before, it was the culture of this team that he was addressing here and trying to turn over and trying to change. Adam Lowry has always kind of been a beacon of light with the Winnipeg Jets, even if they've got the culture wrong in the past. He's always approached the game honestly. He's always approached it the right way. We've never seen him falter. So for him to be kind of held up as the example of this person is a really representative of what we think a hockey player should be. He's representative of what we think the city of Winnipeg is, and he's representative of what we want this team to follow. He's the kind of guy with a lot of strong, I don't want to say strong personalities, but Mark Scheifele is a superstar and he's wearing the A behind a guy who wouldn't be considered a superstar. Josh Morrissey, another superstar. Adam Lowry is the quiet kind of guy, like you mentioned, who can be a leader, who other big superstar type players are willing to follow. That's what you've seen this year in Adam Lowry, along with the mindset that has been instilled by Rick Bowness, is a big reason this team is having the success it is.
You talked a little bit about battling the Colorado Avalanche. I don't want to give short shrift to the Nashville Predators because they certainly came on at the end of the season, but there was really a three-horse race in the Central Division. Dallas Stars, I mean, to me, they almost look like the Vegas Golden Knights last year as far as that kind of depth and balance. What's your take?
Dallas is a scary team. And if you're taking a look, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, I think this Colorado Avalanche matchup for them is borderline a dream matchup. Never mind that that Colorado is stumbling down the stretch here, but the times they've played this year, if you've watched those games, there's not a hint of how the Colorado Avalanche are going to be able to beat the Winnipeg Jets. Like, they haven't shown a flash of the game that they will need to use to get past the Winnipeg Jets. So not only are they trying to figure themselves out at this moment, they're trying to figure out another team that they've got no book on what brings success against them. So I really do like the Jets' chances in the first round. The Dallas Stars are just unbelievably deep. They're unbelievably good on defense. And if Jake Oettinger can play the way we know Jake Oettinger can play, they, to me, are the lineup in the entire NHL that just really does not have a hole in the lineup. The Jets showed a path to playing them better in their last game that they played, shut them out 3-0 with an empty net goal. But the previous games, the Dallas Stars didn't really give them a sniff. And if I'm being honest, the game that Dallas plays against Winnipeg at that point, Dallas essentially has first place locked up and there's not a lot to play for, whereas the Winnipeg Jets were playing like they had everything to play for in that game. So to me, the Dallas Stars are a beast. I had heard a lot of conversations about maybe the Vegas Golden Knights were losing on purpose last night to try and get into a position where they were playing the Dallas Stars. That would seem like a pretty tough choice to make to me. I don't know that anyone out there should be choosing to play the Dallas Stars because, again, I think they are a Teflon team that really don't have a lot of chinks in the armor.
So, Sean, a lot of strange games, 81 and 82, and, you know, one of them in Winnipeg giving some new players a chance, but Laurent Brossoit you know, he couldn't allow three goals. Or if he did allow three goals, then Connor Hellebuyck doesn't get the Bill Jennings Award for the top goals against average. The first shot goes in. But I thought it was a real testament to him and the team that they were able to get it. And Elliot Friedman suggested earlier that they did change things about who gets their names on the Stanley Cup, and they should modify games played so Laurent Brossoit can share the Jennings trophy. But I guess he was two or three games short, appearances short, could share that with Connor Hellebuyck. But regardless, that was a neat little storyline and a great way it finished.
It's criminal that Laurent Brossoit will not get his name on that trophy. He has been such a huge part of the Jets this year. I've said this and I've been saying it for the vast majority of the season once I saw it kind of lock into place. There is no difference between the Winnipeg Jets with Connor Hellebuyck in goal and Laurent Brossoit in goal. That played out over and over and over again as the season went on. Every time Laurent Brossoit went in, the Winnipeg Jets looked no different. Their results were no different. His save percentage is actually higher. And yes, I know he didn't play as much and that factors into this, but Laurent Brossoit's save percentage was higher than Connor Hellebuyck's. His goals against was lower than Connor Hellebuyck's. It is criminal. His name won't be on that trophy. Laurent Brossoit was a massive part of the Jets' success this year. And Laurent Brossoit, I would say book it right now because we know that he wants to be a starting goaltender in the NHL. That's where I expect him to go next year. If teams aren't looking for his services, they're missing the point here. He's had a phenomenal year. He's looked great the entire time. He's going to be a story next year, market. About a third of the way through the season next year, I very much expect we'll be talking about Laurent Brossoit as a starting goaltender of a new team and doing a really good job for them.
So, Sean, last question, just off the ice, a lot of different things happening, and we see Arizona moving to Salt Lake City. So, you know, Winnipeg fans can talk about the Salt Lake City point of view of a team coming over under similar circumstances. Older Winnipeg fans can talk about, with four times the crowd they had in Arizona, about a Winnipeg Jet team leaving all those years ago to Arizona. So I would have to think a very sentimental night, period, but obviously something that a lot of people in Winnipeg can identify with both ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think there's frustration there still, because when you were the Winnipeg Jets, you felt early on the Winnipeg Jets fan base in the 90s. And hey, I was in high school when they left, and that was heartbreaking. It's imprinted. It's emblazoned on the hearts and minds of every Winnipeg Jets fan, what it was like to lose that team and what it was like to get it back. I think it drove people crazy here that the Jets left in the fashion that they did. And yet things got, you know, they held on as long as they did in the desert to try and make that project work. So I think there's some empathy there. I don't think there's a ton of empathy coming out of Winnipeg, if I'm being honest with you. They still feel jilted by that. And part of that is the ownership of all the Jets' old records that now transfer to Seattle's franchise. I got to say, it was so weird the first time I went down to go see a game in Glendale and seeing like Thomas Steen's name up there on the wall and in the Ring of Honor and Dale Hawerchuk and all these kind of things that were like, you know, you grew up as a kid watching these players and they had no connection to Arizona or the city of Phoenix or the city of Glendale, wherever they found themselves at that time. I don't see a path to it happening, but that's the conversation in Winnipeg right now. If you're going to move that team to Utah, is there not some way we can't get the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 records back and we can apply them to 2.0? So there's a little bit of empathy there, but probably less empathy in the city of Winnipeg for Arizona than in most other NHL markets.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Is so at home, game one, is the whiteout all in place again?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That, hey, since the 80s, that's the way it goes around here. People are constantly, I have to keep reminding fans that I'm an impartial journalist. I have to cover this down the middle, but I have them all trying to get me to put on white tuxedos and white ties and all that kind of stuff. Clearly not going to do that, but this is a time of year where Jets fans absolutely love this. If you wear a white t-shirt by accident in public, people will be cheering you on. So it's a good time of year here in Winnipeg.
So you mentioned high school. Did you wear like, was that the powder blue tuxedo you wore to your high school graduation, or what was the color back then?
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. This is the 60s we're talking. I think I probably wore baggy jeans to my graduation or something a little more grungy. Probably something in plaid. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm mixing you up with me way back when. And polyester, what a great material as well. It was absolutely dynamite. Hey, Shad, thanks very much for your time. I know you'll be busy throughout the playoffs. Thanks for making time this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
Always make time. I really appreciate you having me on, Gord. It was great chatting with you.
There we go. Sean Reynolds joining us from Winnipeg. And I'm glad he made that distinction because you can cover things from a home team slant. And I know a lot of people accuse people of being homers to different extents. And I got to say, with the Leaf Boston, Jack Edwards, the play-by-play voice for the Boston Bruins, announcing that this will be the final calls of his career, and all 32 home announcers, and Joe Bowen, Jim Ralph, no different to a certain degree. It's part of their charm, I think, of giving a hometown spin to it. And people my age will remember when Boston had Freddie Cusick and Derek Sanderson, who might have been the ultimate homers before Jack Edwards and Andy Brickley got involved. So anyway, that's part of the fun that goes around the playoffs. But again, Sean Reynolds be part of our Sportsnet family, and it'll be busy. The Canadian-based teams, four of them in action. A really good chance all four can make the second round of the playoffs. Two of them not playing each other in the first round, which is good. You're not going to automatically, mathematically have one of them eliminated. So it is the very best time of the year, but it's also just a very neat time of year if you're Canadian-based teams. Like we said, Jeff and other shows, hockey shows, Kipper and Bourne here, of course, will be talking a lot. Stanley Cup playoffs also over the next few days and weeks in that, postmortems for the 16 other teams. With the quick turnaround with the regular season ending last night, you really haven't had a chance to do extensive postmortems of the 16 teams that didn't make the playoffs. But I know there'll be a lot of that that will be talked about over the next few days, and different guests involved, next few weeks, about what all these teams do moving forward. Again, our thanks to Elliot Friedman for joining us. Chris Cuthbert, the play-by-play voice for the Toronto-Boston series. Our buddy, Panger Vision, Darren Payne, covering the NHL on TNT. And just Sean Reynolds there. Again, a thanks. David Siss, Austin Mackey, Andrew Adams, Jen Rolnick as well for making it easy. Jeff's got it easy. Just an autopilot. Don't tell his bosses, but he's got it easy. I assume Jeff will be back on Monday. I hope his kid did well if it's a hockey tournament this week. I'm not sure. Usually that's the deal. Gord Stellick in for the Jeff Merrick Show. You've been listening to the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.